And I've been feeling so much better since I switched from coffee to OJ. They say it's the vitamin C, but I think it's the vodka.
that note, welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday evening, February 27th, which means a little after 9:30 p.m. Eastern, which means it is time for our regular season finale of the Hoops HD report. It's also our time for our Championship Week video notebook day one. It's time for everything. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by David Griggs and David Dorman. Right below me, John Slica. To his sides, Joby Forts and John Tytel. Hopefully joining us in a few minutes from bracketeer.org is Rocco Miller. I think he's running just a few minutes late today, but we're going to be getting going here without him anyhow.
He's out at the West Virginia Iowa State game on en route to this other game that's going on. So
Okay. Wherever he is, we have a lot to get to because not only are we going to be going over all the major conferences like we do on the normal Hoops HD report, at the end of the show, we're going to be reviewing what happened in the Championship Week conference tournament games tonight, previewing tomorrow's conference tournament games, updating our survival board. I don't even know what else we're going to be doing tonight. So, but one thing for those of you that missed our little 10-minute whatever we did last night, just wanted to.
It was beautiful. It was about 90 seconds of previewing and then 10 minutes of final thoughts.
Pretty much. I think our final thoughts were longer than the regular show last night. Let's see here. First of all, I just want to confirm if anyone is concerned about it. Yes, the puppet is in the puppet bunker. He is
Yeah, but
locked away. We got about
lock him
15
up.
locks on the door this year. He is
Okay.
not getting out.
Oh, you know what? The reason I'm not angry right now is because I am getting out. There is a way for get it. We're going to have a little contest, and I
We'll
am
have a.
confident that I
What we
will
do.
get out.
We'll be doing it at the end of the show, so we'll do our first chance for him to get out at the end of the show. But we're going to start. Going to start with the normal show here, and like we like to do, we're going to start with a blind resume comparison here, if I have it set up correctly, which it looks like I do. Got a couple of profiles here, and the question I'd like to throw out there with each of these is, who do you like better, left or right, or do they both suck?
Now,
And then we'll
if I
eventually get
guess these, I
together.
get out, right, Chad?
No, that's at the end of the show, Griggs. That's
Oh,
not
okay.
this one. This one's for the panel. Joby, let me start with you. Left or right?
All right. Let's see.
Or neither.
It's a good. Well, I mean, the one on the right's got that nice neutral win, which I like. But the one on the left has two roads that are very good in tier one. Obviously, the one on the left is in a major conference, probably the Big 12.
Agreed.
with all those tier ones, unless that's North Carolina magically out of nowhere.
Conference alumnus.
We've done North Carolina too much. And oh, and there's road wins, so it's not North Carolina. But no, I like the one on the left.
Okay.
It's over. It's not a lot of bad.
Oh
The
my God. The
two
one on
that
the left
one.
has a dead giveaway. Look
Okay.
at that loss.
Oh, the
Greg Briggs,
loss. It was Iowa? No.
Okay. Hold on a second. Let me get a couple of opinions here
All right, go ahead.
before we start guessing. Dorman, do you agree with him, the team on the left?
The RPI, I think, is throwing me off, and that's why I think
Wow.
you set this up like that, Chad, to throw me off. I see the bad home loss in the left in tier four, but the one on the right has two tier three losses, one also at home. Home warrior. Yeah, I'm going with Joby.
Left. All right. Did we make a unanimous Tytel going left?
No veto, Chad.
No veto. Okay. Slick, you want to take the first shot at the guess here?
Well, I can
Are you
definitely
cheating
say
like
Joe.
are you cheating like we did in our text? I
Yeah.
cheated on a text thread this today, but you're not, I
I
assume.
will just say Joby is not going to take the team on the right. I just can't decide if it's a Boise State or Utah State. But judging by the dates on the schedule, as well as that tier four, that is Michigan on the left.
Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner. Boise State in Michigan.
Wow. Wow.
Boise State, and forget, I'll be honest, we go down this road. The 27-30, A&M and Nevada are legit to I'll give them credit on that. But all those tier twos are fake. Absolute fake. New Mexico is not the 48th team. Utah State's not the 31st. I
Oh,
mean,
they are. It
it's
is.
fake.
Yeah. Well, that does. Well, Michigan Wolverines, and I think one of the things I want to start with this comparison actually was because we've got a lot of exciting games that happened. One of the craziest weekends I remember in a long time this past weekend.
Yeah, the last
And
time we had a weekend like this, COVID happened. the next week.
Well, yeah, shut up, Griggs. We're not talking to you if you're going to bring that up again. But I want to get right to everything that happened in the Big Ten here. And Dorman, let me start with you. Maybe we start with that Michigan game on Sunday against Wisconsin, because, I mean, there's so many games we could start with. But Michigan, I don't know how they did it, but Hunter Dickinson with the buzzer being three and they went in overtime.
Well, let's start with how they did it, because head coach Gar decided not to foul. How many times are we going to see this? There's so few times you see them foul. They go to the line. They hit the first one. They miss the second on purpose, and the guy taps it in. It happens so, so rarely. But these guys drain threes left and right. I don't understand them not fouling on the floor before he shot the ball. So I completely blame the Wisconsin coaching staff on that. The other part was Wisconsin actually played well most of the game, so I feel bad for the kids. In my bracket today, that was the deciding factor for my last spot. That game yesterday in Ann Arbor just put Michigan right slightly ahead of Wisconsin. So that is a enormous game now on the books.
Yeah, and Dorman, they did that after winning at Rutgers on Thursday. Correct. Also, which is a very huge, difficult place to win. And maybe we'll stick with Rutgers here for a second, Stalika. Scarlet Knights, Sunday night, down 3 billion points, playing like absolute garbage. Biggest comeback in 27 years for the Scarlet Knights. Come back from 19 down the second half. I don't know how they did it, but we won at Penn State.
It's a good thing they did, because the Scarlet Knights had been completely hemorrhaging at home of late, with losses to Nebraska and Michigan by 13. Where they weren't looking very good. I mean, I'm considering the injury to Mag. I think this is probably one of the first notable games they had won in his absence right here, but
at Wisconsin without him also, but yes, go ahead.
I was going to say, being 19 down, not easy to come from given the way that Rutgers plays. They're not a team that typically scores in bunches that I've seen.
No, this is Rutgers. We have great defense, Rutgers, but there is no offense here, and a team with no offense cannot come back from 19 points down. It doesn't happen, but it somehow did. And that's not even neither one of those games we discussed already, Joby, was even the game of the weekend in the Big Ten. That was, or even the comeback of the weekend in the Big Ten. Let's talk about Iowa, Michigan State.
What a game. Oh my God. I was nearby, and our back behind the scenes group was turn to that game. There was a franticness to it. So I got to catch the final minute, or I guess 30 seconds, so to speak. It was just amazing. I mean, there's only so many words you can place to it, but give Fran McCaffrey credit for not giving up. Most coaches wouldn't. They kind of play out the string and stuff. It's like, I feel like if they had missed just one of those shots, they would have just not fouled. Clock would have run out. I mean, it was amazing.
What was it? 23 points in the last 90 seconds, something like that. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. And 11 points down with 58 seconds to go.
And it wasn't like Michigan State was bricking free throws either. They were just continuously trading two for three until it got to critical mass.
The other thing that was amazing about that stretch, and no one's really mentioned this, Fran McCaffrey went the entire time without getting a technical foul.
He almost got one. Did you see his stare out of the ref? Did you see his long stare out of the ref, Griggs?
Well, this is a perfect example. Yeah, one suggestion I found interesting from the ESPN crew, when they say, if you could change one thing, one rule at college basketball, Seth Greenberg's suggestion was radical as all get out, but I think it actually makes a little bit of sense. And that is at the, like, whatever time you say, you know, a minute to go, or just even the time, then the team ahead only has to score four more points. So then you actually have a defensive possession over and over and over again to see it, as opposed to this foul. Hey, that's great. Foul three for two, but I still would rather have basketball.
No Elam endings or whatever that is, Joby. I'm not with you there. But I think Rocco Miller's joining us now from bracketeer.org. Rocco, welcome. If you're with us,
I'm here.
Welcome. Great. I'll get to you 1 second here while you get cut off. But Tytel, before we get to Rocco, I wanted to ask you about a team that had a nice week with two wins, including another impressive home win, this time over Nebraska. I'm sorry, over Northwestern. How about the Terps?
So they had the overtime loss at Nebraska 8 days ago. Everybody was ready to give up on them. And then they bounced back. 18-point home win over Minnesota, 16-point home win over Northwestern, 11-7 in league play, just 2 games behind Purdue, the top of the standings. I have them as a 7 seed, and you got to give Dorman and Stalica credit. They've been riding the Terps for several months now, so well done, guys. They finished the season with a road trip to the Buckeyes and Penn State this week. The key over the past month, power forward Julian Reese. 14 points, 8 boards a game while shooting 65% in his past 11. The scary thought, he's not even the best player in his family this year. His sister Angel is averaging 24 points and 16 boards for the LSU women's team.
Tytel, let me ask you, though. The big hole in this resume is road wins. So does that make this trip to two probably non-tournament teams this week huge for them to fill that hole?
It will fill that hole, I'll give you that, but I don't think it's a huge thing like that they need to win to, like, get into the tournament or anything. I don't know if they're a lock yet, but thanks to teams like Rutgers barely being able to beat Penn State and teams like Illinois not being able to beat Ohio State and the fact they're on the road, I think that gives them a little more wiggle room, but obviously you don't want to be losing to teams outside the bubble in March.
Chad, they have wins at Minnesota and Louisville. You should be
Go back to that for a second, Chad. I mean, you mentioned the lack of road wins. They did have an impressive showing against Tennessee, but it isn't just that they're not winning on the road. It's that they're losing by 27 and 15 and 14 and whatever
Greg, Griggs, I'm not going to agree with you here. They lost by 3 against Tennessee on a neutral court and by 3 at Purdue. So I'm not going to really agree with you there.
And by 35 at Michigan.
But those are the two toughest games away from home. So Rocco, you're here. And speaking of Purdue, Rocco, how about them losing again? This time now getting swept by Indiana.
Well, I it's an interesting question because I think, you start to wonder, is Indiana just the right team to match up with Purdue? With TJD down there, down low on Edie, it seems to be a really good matchup for the Hoosiers in two-game sample size. Obviously, I don't want to take anything away from the achievement that Indiana's earned with those two wins. But I'm also not all the way sold on Indiana because they are a team that was swept by Northwestern. So it's like, a lot of college basketball, as you guys all know, is matchups. And I think it's just a really tough matchup for Purdue so far. But yeah, in general, their play has been slipping the last couple of weeks. So it's something to monitor. I don't think it's enough to knock them off the one line left yet, my opinion. But yeah, they've got to work on, getting their execution down and maybe they're just being figured out by the rest of the country at this point.
Griggs, one last thing I want to mention. You mentioned it in passing already. Illinois with the loss at Ohio State. I don't know that Illinois is in any trouble missing the field at the moment, but not going in the right direction, are they?
They're not. And like, they're kind of starting to slide down the seed list. I don't think that they're in any danger of missing the field, just kind of what you said. But compared to where they were just a few weeks ago, when it really looked like they were, stringing together wins and the top of their profile looked really good, they're in a bit of a tailspin.
All right. Yeah. The upcoming schedule here for the Big Ten, start up on the screen. This is the end of the regular season. A lot of big games on here. Purdue with a road test at Wisconsin. Michigan's going to be at Illinois. We've got Northwestern at Rutgers on Sunday. We got Michigan at Indiana. We got Illinois at Purdue. What else do we have?
The road games for Maryland.
Road games for Maryland, the two road games for Maryland we just mentioned, not showing up on there is going to be Minnesota at Michigan State. They were not able to find a way to reschedule that game. That will be declared a no contest. Those two teams will only play 19 games in the conference season. But let's move on. And Tytel, you're not going to like it. I know it had to have been painful for you. But one of the great buzzer beaters that we had this weekend, probably of all the great buzzer beaters, this shot from beyond half court, And I'm in the wrong conference on the screen there. You know where I was going, though.
I had no idea.
I was going to your Arizona team. Yeah, Arizona State, half court heave, more than half court heave to beat your Wildcats.
Well, I'll talk about this more in the final thought, but allow me to set the stage. So ASU had been 0-29 as an unranked team in the McHale Center when Arizona was ranked. Winless. Tommy Lloyd, one home loss in 2 years as a head coach. However, when your starting center, Umar Ballo, has more fouls, four, than rebounds, three, and your team misses 13 free throws at home, and you don't guard your arch rival's senior shooting guard, who takes the inbounds pass in the final seconds and needs a 60-footer to save his team's season, you can forget about being a number one seed. Who's next?
Who's next? Well, the team they lost to, Arizona State, Rocco, I know you got a few thoughts on them. And where do they stand now? Because this is was a huge win for this team.
Right. I mean, when you're outside the bubble, and I think before that game, ASU, we would agree, was clearly on the outside looking in and you know, had their stumbles in conference. But when you go and you win at Tucson, Arizona, before that day started, that was the sixth best road win that money could buy, according to my board, which Arizona was sixth ranked. That's just a huge differentiator when it comes to the bubble, because now you look at an ASU profile that has Arizona and Creighton, two teams in the top 16, both wins away from home. One of them, of course, in Vegas against Creighton without Kalkbrenner. I get that. But they've won at Oregon. They've won at Colorado. Those are two tough buildings to win. A fellow bubble team that they're going up against is Michigan. They beat them by 25 on a neutral court. This Arizona State team, to me, is now in the tournament and in the first four. They skyrocketed past a lot of the bubble. And this is a multi-layered thing. So that's one element. That's just the NCAA tournament. But we have a situation with Bobby Hurley, fellas, where he has not got a contract extension. His agent and him are looking elsewhere. And so this changes perhaps his life if ASU goes to the tournament, because chances are if they go to the tournament, he will get extended. So the ramifications of a fun buzzer beater altered the course of perhaps, you know, and we'll see how the season plays out, not only their season, but perhaps Bobby Hurley's career. And the other part of that is Arizona State has nothing but more opportunity ahead. They go to USC and UCLA next. If they win one of those two, they're probably almost for sure getting in. And if they win both, they're definitely a lock. So it's just unbelievable that an unguarded 70-foot shot changed all of that.
That's a great
point. Well, they played pretty well for the first 39.
They played a good game.
Yeah,
I mean, even if they lost by two, it's a good
You've got to play well enough to be in a position where a shot at the buzzer wins the Absolutely. Game for you.
Yeah. And I don't – I kind of made a – like smart ass comment in the thing. Well, he had an open look. Well, what are the, like, you can't blame yourself for this. If you're Arizona, blame yourself for not making plays to even make that a possibility. Not because he hit an open shot that one time out of 50 is gonna, I meant to say that will only happen one time out of 50. I can't talk right now. It's that orange juice and vodka.
All right. Let's move on then. Dorman, the team on the right there, I pulled up is USC. Wasn't teams ever the tournament, but they're pair quad wins, one wins at Utah and Colorado. How strengthened is this case, especially with the Arizona schools coming in this weekend?
It's one of the toughest road trips in college basketball, really is, with the altitude and usually the Utes and the Buffs being good at home. They needed a USC, and they really showed up in a big way. Neither were really contests, and UCLA looked good during the week. They looked better, actually, in Boulder than UCLA did on Sunday. This is tight. Both of these teams, as Rocco just pointed out with ASU, it's getting close. They're right on the cut line, on the bubble. USC is probably still, I believe, on the good side of the bubble. So that sets up a huge showdown Saturday in L.A. As ASU goes to USC, I think the winner can feel really good heading to Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament. The loser, I think, is going to need a little more work.
Yeah. Unless, of course, Arizona State wins at UCLA. But yeah,
go ahead. That's a different story.
But, Griggs, I was just going to ask you about UCLA unless you had a different comment to make.
Well, I just had a quick observation that we have all observed. What a great way for this to end, with the Arizona schools hosting the California schools, with two that are sort of solidly in protected seed range and two more that are on the bubble. Anyway, what was your question, Chad?
Well, I was going to ask you because I got UCLA up there on the left, and don't we have a big problem with the UCLA profile now? Because Griggs, they haven't been able to beat a single quad one team at home yet this season.
Yeah, that is.
Don't they really need it?
Yeah, like, yeah, and they've got a chance to do it in the last game of the season.
Yeah, they really need it. Otherwise, you go. Yeah.
You go Arizona ahead, State also needs a quad one home win, and they're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Well, UCLA though is fighting for a one seed at the moment, I think. But real quick, here's the upcoming schedule, and we already know the only games we're circling here are the Arizona schools at the Southern Cal schools. But there's the rest of the schedule for the conference. Joby, let me go to you though. You're an ACC guy, and let me ask you about the another huge buzzer beater we had here after a huge comeback, and what the heck happened to Miami?
Well, I mean, and Miami showed in the first half when they basically were just disemboweling Florida State. Wow, this Miami team, that's a protected seed. This is the sort of team that can make a run to the Final Four. And the second half showed why all of what I just said was complete BS. This Miami team will be a five. I'm pretty confident will be a four or five in that range seeded team. That is not a team you want to be betting on because they don't play very good defense. They have amazing offense, but they don't play very good defense. They will have a tendency to let a team. I could easily see a 12 seed, a 5-12. I could easily see the 12 come up, a disciplined 12 team beat them. But the interesting thing, the last note I'll make on that game is, so Florida State kind of ruined Miami's chance at making a run high up the brackets. Last year, Cleveland, the player who nailed the shot for Florida State, did the exact same thing to Virginia. So the guy just lives off making buzzer beaters and ruining people's seasons. So.
Yeah, Stalika, I'll save Joby the pain of having to discuss it, but his Virginia team also suffered a loss this weekend to North Carolina, and now I got Carolina up there on the right. Carolina also wins tonight at Florida State. Doesn't help them, but it's not a bad loss. So where's this Carolina's team stand now?
I would say in terms of North Carolina, that Virginia win definitely helped because we are talking about a team that's still fighting for a protected seed right here. They're essentially holding serve by getting the win at Florida State, even though the Noles have been playing closer to 500. But overall, it's just an awful picture for the Noles this year. And as we'll get to later, I think there may have been 50 more people either at Tallahassee or at Liberty's arena for an A-Sun game we'll get to later.
Yeah, Carolina, if they beat Duke at home this weekend, is that enough, Dorman?
I don't think so. I think they got, depending on who it is in the ACC tournament, doesn't look like Carolina's going to get the double bye. It looks like they'll have to play the second day as it sits today in the ACC tournament. Depending on who their opponent is, I think they need one more in the ACC tournament. The win at Duke will look good. They'll finally get another two tier one victories, but a neutral win against someone that might be in the field would be a huge help. Then I think you can say they're in. But if they don't win that first game in the ACC tournament, it's going to be a long weekend for the Tar Heels.
Tytel, another team that picked up a bad loss, picked up another win, actually, two wins in a row after their very bad losses, Clemson. Does this team still have a shot at getting in?
They do. It sounds like the Maryland comment, but 10-point loss at Louisville 9 days ago. Everybody's ready to give up on them. Bounced back last week, two huge wins, 18 points at home over the Cues, 25 on the road over NC State. 13-5 in league play. They're one game out of the lead in the conference, which is impossible. Huge game at Joby's team on Tuesday. Host the Irish in the regular season finale on Saturday. The only shame that all their games have these huge scoring margins is that we don't get to see their amazing free throw shooting come into play. They're almost 80%, fourth in the nation from the line.
Yeah,
this is just a scattershot resume here, and there are strong arguments to be made to take them, but there are also some like almost categorically awful losses on here. And I don't know how you evaluate this. It's one of those teams that when we do our mock committee, we're probably not going to be sure what to do with. At least I'm not.
Big game at Virginia.
Big game at Virginia. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick Clemson comment. The 342 non-conference strength of schedule, that extreme bubble, that's last year's Wake Forest. It's exactly the same ranking. Wake Forest was like 341. I think if you're having a hard time deciding or not with Clemson, that's the de facto you're out. But if they get one of these big win or two and get a little bit above that cut line, then maybe shoot them up towards an 11 or 10.
Yeah, I
agree with Rocco. I think the out-of-conference schedule is a killer. And I think UNC is in much better shape than Clemson. After all, they beat Clemson recently. I think UNC – Clemson has to do – whereas Dorman's right, I don't think UNC can take a bad loss in the ACC tournament. They just need that one win in that first game with a Duke win. Clemson needs to do a lot more. Clemson needs to really do a lot more, including –
But they've done a lot. I mean, they've done a lot of good, too. I mean, that's the thing. Their resume tops out. And I kind of agree. I always say that if you don't have a top 340 strength of schedule, that I can't take you seriously. And here's Clemson at 342.
Okay, let's move on here. There's the upcoming schedule. Big games, Clemson at Virginia, NC State at Duke. Saturday, Pittsburgh at Miami. Not Duke at North Carolina, but Pittsburgh at Miami could be the deciding factor here for the regular season title. Pitt, if they win that game and they win at Notre Dame on Wednesday night before that, will be your, believably or not, the ACC regular season champion. Which is not the ACC champion, because that goes to the tournament champion, according to all the ACC people. Be clear there, but Rocco, go ahead.
That's Mike Bray's last home game, so you can't overlook the Notre Dame game. It's gonna be it's gonna be an emotional night. That's a tough challenge for Pitt, actually.
Good point. Very good point. But Rocco, Big 12 time here. I fleshed this conference up earlier. Now we're serious about it. And I think we got to start with the Kansas Jayhawks up top there. Who, this profile here. I've seen people putting them 2-3 2-3 overall, but this volume of quad one wins just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. And it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, they get all the opportunities in the world, so that's nice. And they're also good enough to win all those games. So that's a major accomplishment. No spite to the Jayhawks. But I think, you know, and just in terms of a guessing the committee perspective, the committee already showed us that they liked Alabama for all the damage they've done on the road, including a win at Houston, which is the best possible road win Alabama could get. And then I think, you know, they like Houston a lot because they're number one in basically every predictive and performance metric there is. And Kansas, although they keep building up the Q1 wins, which is an amazing flashy thing, I think they're still stuck in the three hole until they get maybe a big road win. I think they get another chance at Texas.
At Texas on Saturday, yep.
So that might be the one thing that could flip it. But otherwise, for me, like, I'm not going to move them up because it just those are two very definitive things that have Bama and Houston 1 and 2.
Right. And I guess another team, Baylor, we look at what happens here. Kansas State beats Baylor. Baylor beats Texas. As we record this now, Baylor's up at Oklahoma State. Dorman, you mentioned this on our show last night. These teams are almost in each other, but I don't know that any of them are actually moving down, though, even though they're losing to each other, are they?
I don't think it knocks you down at all. I think you only have room to go up unless you're really at the bottom there where you're West Virginia, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State. You're dying for any win in the conference. But as crazy as this sounds, if I'm a coach in this conference, I don't mind taking a first round loss, going home, regrouping, getting fresh, getting your legs back, watching film, and not working all weekend long, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then get back on the travel road Tuesday or Wednesday to go to your tournament site. I'd rather get the rest. I know they're tournament ready. I know these teams are good enough. They can beat about anyone in the country. At this point, I'd rather really get rest and get my team refreshed and get ready for teams that are out of conference that haven't seen us yet.
Okay, is the championship game Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday night.
Saturday.
Okay. Stalika on the right there is Iowa State. If somebody is going in the wrong direction among these top teams, this might be that team, right?
Well, the Clones have now lost three straight, and they're actually in danger of losing their fourth straight if West Virginia is able to get a much-needed road win right here. You look at the remaining schedule with that Baylor, 8-10 is also possible right here. That would probably end their chances of a protected seed, barring a
those might be gone already. I mean, this team is in, but I mean, I don't know. You go 0-3 the rest of the way, you might be looking 7 line. I mean, I don't know, but let's talk.
Seven of 10. Yeah.
Let's talk about that bubble. As Lika mentioned, West Virginia, one of these bubble teams here, is winning at Iowa State right now, which would be huge for the profile. Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, Griggs, I'll put them both up on the screen next to each other. They both suffered losses this weekend. Yeah. And I don't know what you do with either one of these teams at this point. There are just so many losses, and I don't know where they're going to get the wins, especially with Oklahoma State down 11 to Baylor as we record this.
Yeah, Oklahoma State has lost four in a row. Prior to that run, it really looked like they looked like a tournament team on the court, and their profile was starting to look really, really solid. And I think, like, when we were doing our committee shows and the rundowns, we were having them in the top half of the bracket, and we had kind of expected them to move up. But while none of the losses are bad, they are, you know, high in quantity, so to speak.
And if they lose this game, it'll be 16-14. It's
right.
I think you reach a point you can't stomach anymore, the number of losses. Joe, you're the expert on that, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm. What's happening right now that the viewers will know tomorrow morning is Oklahoma State and West Virginia are in the same bucket, and Texas Tech is too. Your overall record matters. You have to be more than two games above 500. Oklahoma State, if they lose this game, they are now right at two. And so all of a sudden you're going to Lubbock against a desperate Texas Tech team. You lose that, that means you will have to get three wins in the Big 12 tournament. Good luck with that. Now, if they get the three wins and lose in the finals, they're in.
Okay, but
that's a really ridiculous call of order. Yeah, Oklahoma State is facing elimination tonight, maybe. Definitely Saturday if they lose to Texas Tech.
Okay, Tytel, what do you think?
Well, I was going to ask Tytel about another team also, but Tytel, your opinion on that, then I got one other team. I know you want to discuss the Oklahoma Sooners as well, game under 500.
I can only handle one team from the Sooner State at a time, so I'm going to go with the Sooners. I usually don't care about teams in last place, and they are 4-12 in league play. I hear you. I get it. Good news, last four wins, West Virginia, Alabama by 24, Kansas State by 14, Iowa State by 11. They're killing these great teams by double digits. They wrap up regular season play at Kansas State Wednesday, then they host TCU Saturday. They just need a little more out of their senior guard, Grant Sherfield. He had 30 points and one turnover in the signature win over the Crimson Tide. In eight games since then, very mediocre. 37% from the field, three turnovers a game. He's got to get it going.
How far do they have to go in the Big 12 tournament to be considered? Do they have to win it all?
I don't know that there isn't an easy answer for that, because it's all about matchups. Like, if you're beating up Oklahoma State, blah. If you upset Kansas, hello.
Okay. Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here. There are a couple games going on as we record this. The Baylor, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, Iowa State. The other games to watch in this conference this week are every single one I just highlighted there. Yes, yeah. Every single one of them. This conference remains ridiculous. Kansas at Texas, maybe the biggest of them all on Saturday. But Slika, Big East time. You are our Big East guy here. And let's start with Marquette, actually. They're on top here. I'll save you having to discuss Xavier for tonight. They pick up the win at Creighton, and then they actually got a bit of a battle from DePaul, but did pick the win there as well.
Yeah, I would be happy to discuss Marquette, because it looked like they were going to be losing the game at Creighton, which would have kept the door open for other teams to end up winning the conference title. But the Golden Eagles probably taking a few lessons from their home game against Xavier, where they had to win kind of a rock fight. They managed to knock off a healthy Creighton team on the road, so they're going to get a lot of credit for that. Now, that being said, they did get out to a pretty big halftime lead and nearly blew it at home against DePaul, who had not looked great at all away from Chicago this year. So now they're just left with either a win at Butler or if heaven forbid they mess the bed there, they'll still get St. John's at home. So the number one seed here is going to be all but inevitable for Matt's Golden Eagles team right here.
Yeah, and Rocco, I pulled up the UConn Huskies on the right there because very strange. When you look at the standings, the team's in fifth place. But this team is probably going to be the second highest seeded team in the Big East, aren't they?
I would say it's neck and neck with them and Xavier right now. I've been higher on UConn than the committee. So after what we learned from the committee, I had to adjust. And so I think, I would if I was in the room, I would take UConn over Xavier. But I don't know if there's been enough damage to Xavier yet to totally prove that out. But I think, you know, Marquette's just done so well. They're on the verge of clinching the league. And I think, you know, even though they don't have, besides the Creighton win, which is really nice, a big time road profile, they might be stuck on the three seed because of that three seed line. I think it's going to be an easy call to put Marquette in the top of the Big East pecking order. But UConn, you know, with that Alabama win and all the damage they did in non-conference, it's tempting to put them up there, but now, you know, the committee, I think, really told us that they care a lot more about true road wins than neutral wins. And with UConn missing the top 16, I think that's, you know, for me at least, that's playing out throughout the board from now on.
Well, one of UConn's remaining road games, Tytel, is at Villanova. Suddenly the red hot Villanova Wildcats, probably too late for an at-large bid, or is it?
It depends on how you value injuries. So this team was dead in the water just 3 weeks ago. They've won 5 of 6 to get over 500. They have a winnable game at the Hall on Tuesday and then a huge game Saturday when they host UConn. The free throw shooting remains awesome. 82.3%, not only number one in the nation, it's a percentage point ahead of Harvard's 82.2 in 1984. They might break the all-time record. So freshman Cam Whitmore, he missed the first 7 games. The team went 2-5 without him. Now they get Justin Moore back, their senior leader as well. Tore his Achilles in the NCAA tournament last March, missed most of the season, back to his old self. 8 assists and 0 turnovers in the double-digit win over Creighton last Saturday.
Well, and going to try to roll things along here quickly because we're starting to run way behind. We got a lot more to get to still, but here's the upcoming schedule of the Big East. I see the big game Xavier at Providence. The UConn Villanova game on Saturday as well. I don't know if I missed any there or not, but Dorman, let's jump over.
Also pay attention to Villanova Seton Hall because this is also going to affect seating right here.
Dorman, over in the SEC, I guess we've got to start with Kentucky because this team is suddenly just winning and winning and winning and winning and looking on the way to a three seed in the SEC tournament and a lock for the NCAAs, are they not?
Absolutely. They're locked in my mind. This team is going to the NCAA tournament. A few weeks ago, I thought they would be lucky to get to the 7, 8, 9, 10 range and then see the 1 or 2 seed right away. I don't think so anymore. Their ceiling is high. If they can make another run in the SEC tournament, go to the finals or go to the semis, call me crazy. A 5 or 6 seed is not out of the picture if they can win in Fayetteville over the weekend and do some damage in the SEC tournament. I think the Kentucky team looks dangerous now. Tshiebwe is playing as good as he has all year after a disappointing start, and they're playing great basketball. I think Calipari has done a great job, and they're in a perfect place to go heading into March.
Right. And Rocco, I want to ask you about this Tennessee team because this team still continues to confuse me. And have you figured them out?
I mean, they're just a really, really strong defensive squad. I mean, they're a matchup nightmare for a lot of teams, especially even when they play a smaller school, probably in the first round of the NCAAs. But beyond that, they don't have a ton of firepower offensively. I think, you know, they've got a nice collection of wins. Obviously, the Kansas and Maryland surge helps them because they beat them both on neutral floors. And USC playing pretty well as well. That's another neutral court win they had in the battle for Atlantis. So I think the resume is pretty strong. You know, obviously the predictives love them because when they play – I think there's probably only about 25 to 30 teams, unless they're on a true road game, that can really hang with Tennessee on a normal day. Obviously, they lost to Colorado, so it's not always true. But and I think when they play the lesser competition, they win by about 25, 30 points, and that's just blown out their power numbers. And so they're still sitting there at about a 3.5 average performance ranking. And that's going to be really great for their seed. It's going to be really hard for them to fall below a 3 seed unless they do slip up against somebody unforeseen. But I don't foresee that just because the defense is way too good and the floor is way too high.
Tytel, let me ask you about team that's kind of the opposite way on the metrics, and that is Missouri. The predictors hate them, but I look at the resume and I said, it doesn't look bad.
I mean, they did win at the team that Rocco just spent 5 minutes talking about, so that's something. Back-to-back losses against Auburn and A&M a couple weeks ago. Bounced back, beat Mississippi State and Georgia, 9-7 in league play. 21 overall wins is tied for the second most of any team in this conference. And the good news, they finished with arguably the easiest schedule of anybody at LSU Wednesday, host Ole Miss Saturday. As far as injury news, last week, head coach Dennis Gates said that senior Isaiah Mosley still on the roster, but no idea if he's going to be available anytime soon.
Talk about the easiest schedule. Joby, the hardest schedule left was the team on the right there.
Who needs it?
And they're falling towards the bubble, aren't they, with the Auburn Tigers?
Yeah, they are. They have not been playing their best ball. And if you look at them, the interesting thing is, if for those who are fans of the bracket matrix, it's like every week it's a slow bleed. They at one point were the 5, then they're a 6, then they're a 7, then they're an 8. They have fallen to a 10 now. And they've unfortunately done this, losing to teams that they really need to take care of business on. And now they've left themselves with a, hey, congratulations. You get to go to the number 2 team in the country in their place. Now, it is a rival, and you can throw records out the window. And they played very well in the Plains earlier. But do you really want to win at Alabama? And then the second point is, the second team you get is, oh, yeah, this Tennessee team that is, Rocco point out, is a protected seed, solid, you know, solid team. Though I will point out, that's the winnable game because Tennessee is only 3-5 in their last 8, including losses to Vanderbilt. So, but that's not an easy task for Bruce Pearl and the company.
Yeah. Here's the upcoming schedule. In the conference, we already looked at some of these games here, but Texas A&M, another team, huge game Saturday hosting Alabama. I think we all think Texas A&M is in now at this point, but
yeah, I think
that could be a huge feather in their cap if they could win this home game against Alabama Saturday.
Yeah, they did lose their last game, but I don't
think a Mississippi State team that
is
probably still on the right side of the bubble now, can't afford losses this week, though, hosting South Carolina and at Vanderbilt for Mississippi State. You got to take care of business, both those Griggs, don't you?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
The consensus for Mississippi State is they're a play-in team right now, and that play-in teams need to win the games they're supposed to win. Right.
Yeah. Tytel, where did you have them Sunday? I forget. Mississippi State.
Let's find out. I have them right on the 11 now as one of the last teams.
Rocco, yeah. Where are they? Are they a play-in game for you or above a play-in?
Talking Mississippi State?
Yeah.
You know, after Mississippi State's win over A&M, they actually got in above the play-in, about 2 spots above.
Okay.
So close. Okay.
Yeah, they're still close because there's a lot of mixed results in there.
All right. Sleeka, over the American Conference, there's only 2 teams worth even discussing. One of them being Houston. Nice 2-0 week. Easily cruised over Tulane and at East Carolina.
Well, Houston was the team that managed to win and look like a team that can be contending at least for number 1 overall, depending on whether or not Kansas or Alabama have a few more stumbles in the next couple weeks right here. Then you look at a team like Memphis, who had to survive a late flurry at home against Cincinnati, but avoided stubbing their toes and their foot in the process.
Yeah, and we've got a huge game here, Dorman, actually coming up on was it? I think that's Sunday, right?
Sunday.
Houston at Memphis. Houston's toughest challenge left in less play, except for probably paying Memphis to get in the conference tournament.
Absolutely. I think Memphis is still on the good side of the bubble today. I think a win Sunday at home against Houston would almost put them for sure lock in, no matter what you do in the conference tournament. If they can win at home Sunday, I think they'd get their ticket.
Yeah, I think if they win this game at SMU before that, I mean, right now you have the risk of two bad losses.
Yep.
You win that one, at least you only have the risk of one bad loss at the conference tournament. And yeah. So I think that's probably enough, but we'll see. Obviously, they have the upcoming schedule. Not much more to discuss other than the one game that we already mentioned, Wichita State at Houston Thursday, Memphis at SMU, the other two games. Let's jump over to the Mountain West. Joby, your favorite conference.
Yes, sir. We've got three protected seats here.
But
the Nets are disgusting.
Absolutely. They're beautiful.
Rocco, let me
my advice.
Rocco, let me ask you about San Diego State first, though. And how good is this team, especially with another buzzer beater this weekend, their win at New Mexico?
Well, they needed a buzzer beater, but that was an amazing crowd at the Pit. I gotta admit, I mean, the Pit at New Mexico has had two or three unbelievable crowds this year.
They've had
one. And San Diego State, you know, to persevere in that environment, regardless of, you know, needing a buzzer beater, is an impressive feat, even though they're a better team overall. And I think San Diego State's just done the hard work that a class of the conference needs to do, getting the key road wins in this league. You know, really untouchable at home besides the one slip up against that New Mexico team, who, by the way, I think when New Mexico's clicking is easily the second best team. But obviously they've been through injuries and other issues. But yeah, that was a phenomenal game. I think San Diego State, you know, with the addition of Darian Trammell from Seattle U, the WAC, one of the WAC all WAC players last year, he had a phenomenal game despite Butler being the hero. They've also benefited. This was going to be my final thought, but I'll say it. I'll do it now. So many teams around the final protected seed spots, whether you look at Virginia, Iowa State, St. Mary's, Miami, Northwestern, Creighton, all of them lost. So San Diego State's really benefiting from that and now kind of really has a shot at getting a protected seed. So it was a tremendous weekend for the Aztecs in terms of just not losing and getting a good win.
Yeah, that protected seed, you've got to win these last five games, right? The two regular season games and three conference tournament games.
Probably. I don't think the championship game is going to matter, but they got to get to the championship game.
Okay. There is also the bubble picture here. We talked about Boise State at the top of the show a bit. Titel, them in Nevada are kind of your bubble here, are they not?
Yes. Yeah, since losing at UNLV last month, the Wolfpack 6-1, only a road loss at Utah State. Two games behind the Aztecs has topped the standings, currently hanging on for dear life at Wyoming as we speak. Then they host the Rebels in the revenge game on Saturday. The reason they win most of their close games, almost 80% from the free throw line, number two in the nation, it's not a surprise, obviously. Their coach, Steve Alford, career 90% from the line at Indiana.
Joby, I know you had thoughts on these teams also. I'll give you a couple of seconds here, too.
Picking out Boise, which I, in my opinion, is what they are right now. Consensus. Let's be honest. You know, as much as I think these teams are bloated, their resumes are bloated. They did it. They didn't. I want to stress this. They didn't do it by encouraging road wins and stuff. The total number of road wins is like 1.5 per team. They didn't go out and be road warriors. That's not what they did to do this. They did it by playing the crud of the Pac-12 at their place. I mean, and in neutral sites. Not the good part, not Arizona, not UCLA, but Washington State and Stanford and all the crud. And so they game the system. They have these nets. And what happens is when you have a ridiculous net, Nevada is a tier one home win. That's ridiculous when you compare it to what, you know, the other big conferences we've talked about. Boise State's a perfect example of that. I've seen this team play. They're awful. I mean, they're awful. They really are a bad team, but they're probably going to get in and they're going to probably lose in that. And they might be in the play-in game right now and they're going to lose. And we'll go, wow, Mountain West stinks in the NCAA tournament again. I mean, these teams aren't that good. They aren't that good. And they loaded their resumes to get in, and I don't like it. As a numbers guy, that's why I have an axe to grind against these guys, because they don't deserve it.
Griggs, How about Utah State? They're still right there in a lot of people's minds.
I love talking about how great I think this league is, primarily to drive Joby crazy. But like, when we do our seed lists, I actually have some of the teams even lower than he does, including this one. I don't completely agree with his assessment on how they did it. I think they did it by scheduling a collective amount of very winnable out of conference road games. I think they went 14-11 in true road games, which when you adjust that comes out to like 19-6. And I think that's one of the ways that, whether they did it on purpose or not, that kind of increased the net the way that it did. But that being said, how good is Utah State? They're okay. Show me the tournament team that they beat away from home.
I can't. That's the problem here, and that's, you know, that's.
And it isn't anything personal. I just don't think they're. I don't have an axe to grind against them. I just don't think they've done enough. I like some other under the radar teams more than I like them.
There are some big games coming up this week, with San Diego State at Boise State coming up Tuesday night. Boise State at Utah State Saturday. San Diego State's got Wyoming on Saturday, right. Also. Huge game Saturday, Sleek, of Chicago State at Fresno State. Yeah. Rocco will be there.
Rocco, yeah.
I thought Rocco was going to be saving up for Chicago State and Gonzaga.
That too.
We'll be getting to later.
Well, let's get that. Let's get right there right now. It's West Coast Conference time, and we had the big game, and Dorman, I mean, Gonzaga kind of had it most of the way.
Gonzaga had it most of the way. They came out and played a really strong first half behind a crowd that was absolutely awesome. The atmosphere in the Kennel on Saturday night was phenomenal, as well as the pit in New Mexico. But I got to tell you, Chad, I got a lot of credit for St. Mary's. I love the point guard Johnson. That kid is a competitor. That kid is a winner. St. Mary's could have gotten blown out of the building. Everything was going against them. They were down about 14, I believe. Next thing I know, there was a couple minutes left, and they were, you know, they were still there, down 5 or 6. I really like the St. Mary's team. And if we're going to talk about Gonzaga, I think Gonzaga might sneak up on some people. I was down on them early in the season. I'm kind of getting higher and higher on them as we go. This might be the year where no one's picking them in the end, and they actually might show up in the end.
That's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because right now I've got to see the matchups, obviously, but I'm leaning towards throwing them my Final Four right now, the way they've been playing lately. So I love the number one adjusted offense in the nation, and that goes a long way in tournament play, believe it or not, even more than defense if you look at some of the numbers in the past.
Yeah. You're right,
Chad. Tytel, before we move on to the upcoming games, you had a few comments on Santa Clara as well?
We got to give it up to Coach Herb Sendek. Santa Clara's been playing hoops for 114 years. They've only had 4 previous times where they won 23 in the regular season. Now it's 5 after the regular season finale at San Diego last Saturday, finishing on a 7-game winning streak. Bad news for the conference tourney. They were swept by the Zags and St. Mary's. Good news, if they can upset one of them and get the signature win of the season and rack up 25 wins this season, maybe?
I'll tell you what, give me half a second here. I just lost the screen share. I got to get it back up here. Here it is.
I thought there was something wrong with the screen. Look at that ladder format.
This is the upcoming games of the West Coast. That's why I just switched the screens here. Instead of going to the schedule, here we go. The massive extended ladder. And I guess there's, we'll look at this more in our video notebooks as we go ahead here. But there's your upcoming games, and Gonzaga will get probably Santa Clara in the semifinal. St. Mary's will get probably Loyola Marymount, who did beat both St. Mary's and Gonzaga during the season in their semifinal, possible championship game Tuesday. Rocco, I got to ask you about this, though. The reason that St. Mary's is the one seed is because the West Coast Conference uses the net as the tiebreaker, correct?
It's the third tiebreaker, Chad.
So it's the third tiebreaker, and all the ties were done. And the net, though, is defined as a ranking and a sorting tool, correct? As a sorting tool, not as a ranking tool. So they're using something that's used to sort other teams to rank them. And I personally have a problem with that. I think it's the wrong metric to use. I'd like to see them use maybe the system that KenPom developed for the WAC, or Heck, even use the JNG, which actually makes you based on what you how you performed. Am I?
Yeah. So
or a coin flip, honestly.
No, don't flip a coin.
Well, yeah, it's funny.
Paper, rock, scissors among the mascots. That's okay. How you do it. I'm telling you.
Go ahead, Rocco.
Yeah, so it's funny you said that because I called the league office last Wednesday and got to the bottom of this early. So the background is the last couple of years, KenPom actually designed that WAC system for the WCC. The WCC the last 2 years used the KenPom system. Now that they're back to, you know, non-COVID season, I guess we can call it, they went to a more standardized version of seeding the teams. In the past, before the KenPom format, they actually had a coin flip for the third tiebreaker, which it would have been in play here. The second tiebreaker, just for everybody's understanding, was common opponents. Who did you lose to? Well, they both lost to LMU of all teams. So that brought us to the third tiebreaker. But again, that could happen easily in future years. If they both only lost once to each other, it would be the same situation. And before the coin toss, in the older days, it was the RPI. So they had an outdated RPI. They didn't want to do the coin toss, and they just went with the net. And, you know, here we are.
I still say paper, rock, scissors on television mascots.
That might have been better. That might have been better.
Yeah.
Let's get to the conference tournament portion of our show here. That completes all of our major conferences. But it was the start of championship week today. It was first round day in the A-Sun. Salika, let me start with you with the game of the night, North Florida and Bellarmine, buzzer beater by Justin Betts with 0.4 seconds left.
And keep in mind, this is a Bellarmine's fourth win in a row in Atlantic Sun Conference play and their second buzzer beater in a row on Liberty's home floor. Last year, it actually knocked out the Flames and cleared the way for Bellarmine to win the A-Sun Conference Championship. And, well, nothing beyond that, but now at least the Knights have earned their chance for another bid against Liberty, which will probably go down in flames tomorrow.
And they will be at Liberty tomorrow. And Dorman, Queens, first ever A-Sun game, tournament game. They beat Gulf Coast.
Yes, Florida Gulf Coast was going in the wrong direction coming into tonight. They were game. They were with them the whole way. But Queens has very strong guard play. That's why they beat Kennesaw once already. So this is what Kennesaw wanted. They wanted their rematch. But Queens will be formidable tomorrow. I love, like I said, their guard play, and guards win in March. So watch this game tomorrow. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Queens, Kennesaw, Stetson, Lipscomb, Liberty, Bellarmine, Eastern Kentucky, North Alabama, all on campus
quad
sites
box.
Tomorrow.
All tipping quad up box. At 7. The
Rocco,
quad box.
You see any upsets, such as maybe that Queens-Kennesaw game? Are you actually going to be at that game, actually?
Yeah, I actually just arrived in Atlanta tonight. Yeah. And I will be there. Woo! Fired up, man. So it's I was supposed to come here for the Kennesaw-Liberty game 2 weeks ago. Didn't work out. Back makeup call here. And we've got A-Sun quarterfinal action. So we're very much excited. I already been texting with Grant Leonard tonight, congratulating him on the win, the Queens head coach. And the Royals win their first ever D1 postseason game tonight. Congrats to them. So that'll be a lot of excitement. I think, Liberty's probably too much class for Bellarmine. I think if you're going to find an upset, you got to look, even though they lost their last game of the season, at this upstart North Alabama team at 1.18 out of 9 out of the bottom of the league up to the sixth seed now. Very well coached by Tony Pujol. Watch out for the Lions.
And you know what? That could make things interesting, too. If that happens, this conference does reseed. North Alabama could be the one playing Kennesaw, giving Liberty the tougher semifinal against either Stetson or Lipscomb, I think. So, because I think Stetson and Lipscomb are the next two teams after Kennesaw and Liberty in this conference, from what I saw here.
Yeah, and I think the big story here, as Griggs tweeted, what is Bellarmine and Queens both advancing. If you're a poker person, this gives Kennesaw State three different outs. They can either win it themselves, Queens can win, or Bellarmine can win. They've got three outs to the tournament.
There we go. All right. It is also kicking off tomorrow, Horizon League Tournament Day.
Opening round in the Horizon League.
And the big one, Tytel, that everyone's circling is the Detroit Mercy Purdue Fort Wayne, because if Antoine Davis and his team can win it, he's going to have a legitimate shot at catching Pistol Pete in the quarterfinal round.
Which is an amazing thing to say, but my question for you, Chad, is what if they're, like, losing by double digits in the first half but he's got like 30 at halftime. Does his dad just say, go for it?
I think he takes the other four guys off the court and just lets them play one on five. but what about these games, Joe? Do you see any upsets here in terms of the seeds, at least these three games tomorrow? Robert Morris, IMPI, Wright State, Green Bay.
If I were to call an upset, it would be the Fort Wayne Detroit Mercy. I mean, I know it's only an 8-9, but precisely because I think they're going to have, I think there's going to be so much focus on Davis jacking it up, you know, that it might destroy the team chemistry like it kind of has all year, to be honest. And I think the pressure will be even more so tomorrow. So that's where I would go. I mean, no way IUPI wins. Just let's throw that.
I'll tell you
and
what.
Green Bay is almost as bad. So
I'll tell you what. The IUPI picked up a win down the stretch. I forget who they beat down the stretch, but they also were
Robert
in it.
Morris.
They beat Robert Morris right after Robert Morris beat Youngstown. And then they were tied with Youngstown until midway through the second half before I think they ended the game on a 30-0 run for Youngstown in that game. But they showed a little life the last week of the season, the Jaguars. Not enough, maybe. But, Stalika, who wins this conference tournament?
I know you and the puppet like to have penguin fever,
yes,
but I just cannot get Northern Kentucky out of my mind right here. They will find a way to wreck the party right here. Mark my words.
I'll tell you something. I just picked Northern Kentucky today in the Jerome, despite the fact that I have penguin fever. But Rocco, do you have penguin fever?
I do. I've had it all day, but like, I would put them as the probably percentage-wise favorite, and I'm sure the analytic people agree with that. But I'd say the team that's been knocking on the door, they've had some tough losses, but they also had some breakthroughs at the end, and they have a very, very easy first game here, is Wright State. And I think Wright State can go all the way because Milwaukee is – out of the teams with the byes, the top four, Milwaukee's the easiest target. And I think that's a really good draw because then after they get – if they do get that win, you get a break, you go to Indianapolis, 3 days off, you refresh. And Wright State, if you look at the analytics in the last month, them and Youngstown are neck and neck. So – and I think they can definitely hang with Cleveland State and beat them.
That's a pick on with the seven seed. I like that. I wish I had
done it. I would imagine they'd be playing Youngstown, though, because they'd probably be the –
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yep, the higher or lower. Thanks, Joby. That's a good catch. So they're gonna have to take
No. Youngstown would play either the 8 or 9 seed actually as the 1 seed. So they would play.
No, I'm talking about
the semis. Yes, thank you. Yeah, semis. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
You are all wrong. It is the Penguins. It is the manifest destiny that we are going to have dancing penguins.
It's first round day in the Patriot League tomorrow, Dorman. Loyola, Maryland, Holy Cross, American Bucknell. And I will throw this out there. Holy Cross, was it 7, 8 years ago, came out of this same exact 9 seed, won 5 games on the road to win this, or 4 games on the road to win this conference tournament. So don't overlook this the first round in Patriot League, right?
Not happening again. I like Loyola Maryland to end those dreams tomorrow. American Bucknell's interesting. This is not the Bucknell, the great Bucknell teams of past. I like American, but that could be a tight game. I think Colgate is the class of this Patriot League. You know me. I love underdogs. I love long shots. I'm looking for one. I really can't find it. I don't see any – I don't want to say anyway. And if the way this plays out, I see Colgate winning this league tournament 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah, do you agree with him? Tytel, do you agree with him? I think you're on the Colgate bandwagon also here.
Matt Langle-Pedalum, what do you think? It's amazing that the stuff with him, though. So his first several years at Colgate, he had like 6 straight losing seasons. And since 2018, he's won at least 19 games every year. So I applaud the administration and the athletic department for sticking with him because it's paying big dividends.
Wait, but doesn't Lafayette have a Penn alum as their head? Oh, wait, no, he's on suspension right now. Never. But I do.
I like the Penguins. That's who I like.
Joby, are you going to Colgate also? Should we just move on to the next conference?
I think Rocco's right. They win 9 out of 10 or 8 out of 10. I think Navy is that 1 out of 2. It's not like a random, it's not like Colgate and everybody else. I think Colgate is way ahead. Navy is well slated in second, and then it really is everybody else at that point.
Rocco, it is first round day, first out of like 300 round day in the Sun Belt with all kinds of days off in between and everything here. But what a day with Coastal Carolina, Arkansas State, Texas State, Georgia State. Which game are you focusing in on? Neither of them has an answer.
Well, yeah, quite frankly, I think Georgia State and Coastal are dead in the water. I'll take the Red Wolves and Texas State for various reasons. We don't need to hash that out. But regardless, like this tournament really fires me up. It's, you know, I know it's not Griggs's favorite because it's in Pensacola and not on campus. But the really interesting thing, I don't know what inspired me to do it. I went game by game all the way through the end and just went off of head-to-head results during the season. And I landed with Old Dominion beating South Alabama in the title game because those matchups just gave that. So that just goes to show just a little microcosm of how many different directions this bracket could go. And we've seen it in the old Sun Belt, which was weaker. This is a much stronger Sun Belt. The top four are all very strong. And even teams like Troy, South Alabama, and Old Dominion are very capable of winning it.
And Griggs, I look at this and I literally say, I have no idea who's going to win this thing. I think it's one of the most wide open conference tournaments we have.
Right.
And unless you disagree with me.
No, I think it's wide open. And I think it's wide open among the four teams that got the buys. I kind of think it's, but well, it's even more wide open.
I like ODU kind of in there too.
Yeah. Old Dominion, who's been playing well. Once we get really down to the quarterfinals, I think it's wide open. And maybe even before that, I don't know.
Stalika, who's your pick?
I don't think it's going to be Georgia State. I mean, Jonas Hayes had his 1 year in the Sun last year in March in the NIT. Mm-hmm. I was flipping a coin between Southern Miss and Marshall in the championship game, but I think I am going to go with Southern Miss in this one.
All right, so you are going the top seed. One more pick here. Tytel, what do you got?
Marshall. They're the only team in the nation with a pair of 20-point scorers.
All right. On that note, let's go to what happens here? I lost the screen again. Griggs, fill in here for a second while I try to get the screen back. Say something.
All right. Well, I'm getting out of the puppet bunker here in a second with what we're, I think, about to do. Or is there?
How's the orange juice?
Oh, it's great. I feel so much better. I mean,
we're having a little bit of technical difficulties here. I'm trying to get the screen back. Give me three-tenths of a second. Keep him locked up. Okay, let's go back to the screen share one more time here. And, we've got to do our survival board first. This is a tool we do for the NCAA Tournament Committee. We track how many teams are left available for them to choose. And this is where it was heading into play today. There were 339 teams left with a shot to win it all.
Oh, yeah, we did forget to mention there was action in the MEAC.
So. Yeah, but as a result of today's two conference tournament games and an elimination of the SWAC. Uh, 336 teams remain with a chance to win it all. Three teams coming off. The two losers, Florida A&M, fell off as well by virtue of swapping the SWAC. But if you look down on the screen here, Selection Committee, if you're watching, if you see teams in blue, those are locks. Grace, which means you have to take them, correct?
Yeah, the committee has to select those teams.
What about a team like Oklahoma? They're in green.
That means the committee has to kind of like, they have to consider it. They have to think about it. Maybe
there might be an at-large basis for them if they win the rest of their games. What if you're in red, though? What if the committee, Griggs, said maybe we should take Jacksonville State?
Well, I mean, they can't. Because they would come on here and see that they're not eligible to be selected.
Correct. So huge tool for the committee here, right, in case they're wondering, in case they're thinking about maybe giving an at-large bid to South Florida. No, you can't. They're not in green or in blue.
Yeah, and this is synced with the workbook, so they know not to select teams.
Let's jump over here. Griggs, we mentioned it. We're going to give you a chance to get out of the puppet bunker. And it's very simple. I've pulled up another pair of blind resumes for you. All you have to do is tell me who these two teams are. That's it. So, tell me these two teams are. You're out of the puppet bunker. We'll give you a shot every night if you get it wrong tonight.
Well, I'm getting out.
Okay. Who are the two teams?
Well, I'll tell you once I'm out.
So you're not making it? If you don't make it, no, you've got to guess right now.
Well, I know who those teams are. So what?
Okay, go ahead.
No, you said that I had to know who they were. You didn't say I had to say who they were.
All right. You're gonna. There's gonna be the failure buzzers coming. Last
no,
chance.
No, no, no. Wait. I know who this is. Both of them are terrible. So I know who this is.
Go ahead.
This is North Carolina and Clemson.
Oh, is he right? Sleeky, think he's right?
Nope.
No, that's
not if North Carolina has a 175 net.
Just missed. It's Rice and Weber State. I can't believe you couldn't get that, Scriggs. I mean, that was so easy.
Rice and Weber State are not even anywhere near the board. Why the hell would you select those teams?
All right, I'll give you another shot tomorrow night, but another night in the Puppet Bunker. Let's go to final thoughts here. And, Sleek, let me start off with you.
We talk about St. Mary's and Gonzaga resorting to the net for a tiebreaker. There was an instance back in 2000 when John Feinstein wrote The Last Amateurs as far as talking about the Patriot League. Going into the last game of the regular season there, both Lafayette and Navy were 12-1. Navy, I think, had a 15-point edge in the RPI, but because Navy was hosting a god-awful Army team at home and Lafayette was playing at a third place Bucknell on the road, those rankings completely flipped overnight, and Lafayette ended up getting the number one seed by virtue of that RPI tiebreaker by a couple spots. And that was a big deal in the Patriot League because back then, home court, well, the entire tournament went to the number one seed. They did throw Navy a bit of a bone, gave them a bye into the semifinal round, but when they got to the championship game, home court was huge because Lafayette blew Navy out of the water to advance to the 2000 NCAA tournament.
All right, a little history lesson. Joby. I got to get a screen share up here for you also. But go ahead, you could start.
Yeah, that most of the sports world in college basketball is aware of the passing of Terry Holland, who was – everybody knows I'm a Virginia guy, and Terry Holland was the first coach that I ever got to see coach the Virginia Cavaliers. And I wanted to take a moment to not just talk about what he did on as a coach in the basketball. He's still, even with Bennett, the all-time winningest coach at Virginia. But all the people that have stood on his shoulders building off it. You know, we talk about the coaching trees. You know, Seth Greenberg talked about being one of the coaching tree members of it. You know, Dave Odom, Jeff Jones, you know, Rocco picked Old Dominion. Jeff Jones, you know, can he make it? But it's more than just that. He later became athletic director. And what he did to Virginia sports before he arrived, Virginia only had two national titles in its history. One of those was a boxing title in 1935. So, and another was a lacrosse title. Since he came, winning that 1976 ACC tournament changed the entire department to actually say, hey, maybe this sports thing is something we can give a try across all Olympic sports. And then later as the head of the athletic department, Virginia has since that time, since Ralph Sampson, et cetera, after that time period, has won 29 national titles in various sports, including basketball, as we all know from 2019. Terry Holland's legacy stands strong and way above. You know, we will mourn him. We'll mourn his passing, but we will never forget the contributions that he gave to the game, to Virginia, and as a prince of a human being to society writ large.
Wow. Great thoughts. A great tribute, Joby. Thank you. And let's go back a little later here. Titel, up to you on final thoughts and a little more celebratory here, huh?
If you say so. So this is the before shot of myself and about 30 other alums crammed into the upper level of a DC bar to watch the big rivalry game last Saturday afternoon. This was taken just after Rocco's favorite Pella Larson made the go-ahead layup in the final seconds to give us a one-point lead. Everybody's cheering. Somebody's like, oh, this is a great time to take a photo. And then they make the impossible shot. It was one of the most painful losses I've ever experienced. Imagine your arch rival on your home court, 60-foot, like, all the – it's not a postseason loss. I get it. Our season continues. But God help the Sun Devils if they face us in the conference tourney next week. we're going to be out for blood.
Oh, that could be a, that could be an ugly game, I think.
Hey, I've been, I think I was thrown out of that bar.
You thrown out of your bar. Dorman, let me go to you next.
I'm going to go to the Big East here. I was looking at breaking down their conference tournament where everybody stood last night. And there's an interesting path situation here going on for UConn. The Huskies are, for all intents and purposes, if you look at the brackets from the people you trust, are right around the 4, the 5, the 6 line. So basically they're in play for a protected seed. Now, the Big East tournament goes at the Madison Square Garden. They're home away from home. They love the garden. Their fans come rolling in. They'll be packed, and they'll be jumping there for the Huskies. The reason that the Big East tournament is going to be so big for UConn, like I said, if they win, they get a protected seed, I believe. The protected seed then leads them, to me, to the East Regional. They can play that East Regional without leaving the state of New York. They can get 2 games in Albany and then right back to the same spot the Big East tournament was in. They're going right back to the Garden. Those are 4 great games that UConn would love to be involved in, and they would love that path. So the Big East tournament is huge for the Huskies of UConn.
Yeah, it really is. Great point. Rocco.
Yeah, so plan A was Bobby Hurley. Plan B was San Diego State. So let's go to plan C, which is the WCC. Back to the WCC, you know, the tournament coming up. Just share a few thoughts. I'll be there Monday, Tuesday, semis and finals like last year. Can't wait. But I do think BYU will be too much for LMU. They've been playing a little bit better lately. And, you know, you look at BYU being on the same side of the bracket as St. Mary's, 2 very, very close games. In fact, if Aiden Mahaney doesn't make a couple ridiculous shots in the game in Moraga, BYU might have got that road win, and that would be a whole different can of worms for St. Mary's resume. It didn't happen. But anyway, that should be a really tight game. I do think in the end, you know, Santa Clara is deadly offensively, but that plays a lot into Gonzaga's hands. I do think Santa Clara will have the best player in the court, in, if that is the semifinal, in Brandon Podziemski, Pods as we call him. But I think Gonzaga gets out of there. And I do think Gonzaga has performed better than St. Mary's, even though they split the series. If you remember the game in Moraga, St. Mary's really had to rally to get that thing to overtime and pull it out in OT. They were down 8 late. Gonzaga, despite St. Mary's fighting back, was clearly the better team in the kennel as well. So I'm going to give Gonzaga the nod in the tournament once again for like the 100th straight year. But I will say this. I do have concerns about Gonzaga and the NCAAs just because I don't think they have a bona fide pro like they usually do. I think Timmy will probably have a cup of tea in the NBA. I think Strother might be an NBA player, but it's not bona fide. You know, the last few years, they had Chet Holmgren and Nembhard's a great pro already. But I think Gonzaga's missing that gear, and that's probably why you've seen some of the drop-off this year. And I think in order to win a national title, you need a pro or two on your team. I'm not sold that Gonzaga has that.
All right.
Rocco, can I ask you a question? I'm very jealous of your road trip. Did you tell your household you'll see him again on April 4th?
I've mastered the 2-day trip, Dorman. I get back right away. Just do the game and get out of there.
Greg, you want to finish this off here for the night?
Yeah, first thought, this is a down year for Gonzaga, and they're ranked 10th. I wish to God my team could have those kinds of down years. Yes. Secondly, like, I mean, to
the YMCA of what?
Yeah, YMCA of what? Yeah, Saturday was just a crazy day in general. Like, you know, we've beaten the Arizona State, Arizona buzzer beater into the ground, and how meaningful it was. It was 1 of 3, and all of them were kind of crazy in their own little way. Florida State beat Miami at the buzzer. San Diego State, we mentioned that, beating New Mexico at the buzzer, which they didn't, San Diego State didn't necessarily need, but New Mexico did. And there was another win, and it wasn't technically a conference tournament game, but it was the first de facto conference tournament game between Lindenwood and Little Rock. Lindenwood got it to overtime, beat Little Rock at the buzzer. I think it's the 3rd or 4th time all season Little Rock's lost at the buzzer. They lost 9 games either in overtime or by 3 points or less. So it was just, again, just kind of a crazy day with all 4 of those games. I didn't see very many. It was just, I didn't see very many of the games until that point, but I actually saw all four buzzer beaters as they happened. So, kind of a cool day.
So your final thought is telling us what games you watched.
Yes, that is my final
Hey,
thought.
good thought. Good thought. No, just kidding with you. But
Yeah.
I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We will, even though we don't have any more regular season Hoops HD reports, we will be back every single night at the conclusion of the play or near conclusion of play for Championship Week Video Notebooks. We've got a couple bracket rundowns coming, one Thursday night, one Monday next week. A lot more content on the website, a lot more podcasts. So on behalf of David Dorman, Joby Fortson, John Tytel in the center square, John Sleek and David Griggs to his side, Rocco Miller joining us from Bracketeer.org. If you're in Georgia, head to the Kennesaw game. Say hello to Rocco while you're there. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again tomorrow night.